With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, welcome along to Writer's Routine. This week, we're talking to Mara Timone. She works in the Ministry of Defence in a top secret job that actually we can't really know much more about, but she has put some of that knowledge and experience into her brand new espionage novel called City of Spies. It's been dubbed Le Carré meets Casablanca, and it's been inspired by a part of the war that no one really knows about. Now we talk about her and her unique ways of getting into the character. You'll understand the pause in just a sec. Also, you can find out how it is the character that knows what's happening, not really the writer at all. And also, how she took her reader and fully immersed them in a different place.
And I start peppering in bits of the city. What sort of food do they normally eat? What sort of places do they normally go? What's the music like? My character has quite a few mishaps or adventures going around some of the historic places, the relics, the remains of the castle. So I start adding things in there based on what I feel when I'm there.
So there's more on the way with Mara Timone in this week's Writer's Routine. Yes, welcome along. It's Writer's Routine, the show where we take a little sneak peek inside the day of some of the most successful authors around. My name's Dan Simpson. Thank you so much for listening to us. This episode of the show is sponsored by The House of Paris Le Grand. It's out now by Nicholas Robinson, who has supported us over on Patreon. It was published back in March. Nicholas was due to sign with an agent, but then lockdown happened. But he pushed on and he published the book regardless, thinking that the world needed some fun and frolic. And they get it with this book. Now, it follows Sophie, who is hopeless, dull, boring, not really got much going on. But everything soon changes after a near-death experience. And then she writes a bucket list. She's going through a divorce. She wants to finally figure out what she wants to get done in life. And this leads her to meet the titular Paris. Paris Le Grand. I think Le Grand. That's how I read it as Le Grand. A drag queen, an exuberant, humongous, hysterical character. It's proper rom-com, this book, and brilliantly, unashamedly so. It's all about Sophie finding happiness with the help of a huge host of these incredibly colourful characters. If you love joy and happiness, and a little bit of campness too, brilliant campness, you will love this book. It's the perfect place to start as well, because it's the beginning of a trilogy all about Paris. They follow all different aspects of life. Now, the first, The House of Paris Le Grand, also explores mental health struggles, but it does it in a beautiful way that lacks the occasional overbearing worthiness, I guess, that sometimes those conversations can have. I mean, it's right that we need to do them, but I find sometimes that happens when it's written down. But these don't have that. It's a fantastic, it's a fun book, and I'm delighted that Nicholas has supported us, because it's given me the chance to tell you about it. It's called The House of Paris Le Grand. And as I say, Nicholas pushed on and released it through lockdown to give the world some colourful joy. And it would mean the world if you went and checked it out and helped out our writing community here. You can grab yourself a copy using the link in the episode notes and over at writersroutine.com. and make a start on the first of a brand new brilliant trilogy by Nicholas Robinson. Now this week we're chatting to Mara Timone all about a day in the life of writing her brand new novel, City of Spies. It all comes from a part of history that she wasn't really that sure about, the part of Portugal in the Second World War. And when she was told that she should look into it, her mind immediately started going. Ideas started happening. Now we talk more about that and also about what happens when a character goes their own way and how you have to follow them. We also chat about how much she likes to get done in a day, in a week, and why she took on NaNoWriMo, which is the National November Writing Month. You try and crack through as many words as you can in a particular way in November. And also you can hear about her ways of getting into character, which I hinted at earlier, they are absolutely brilliant. Proper inspirational, these. So listen up for those, and we start, as we always do, with what Mara sees around her in the place where she sits down to write.
Okay, so I will give you my proper writing room, which is to say a spare bedroom in my flat in East London. In front of my desk, very large computer screen, and a replica painting. I don't know who the artist is, but very pretty, very 19th century look. To my left, between two very large bookcases, is a window overlooking one of the canals. So it's quite nice to see the narrowboats going up and down the canal each day. Behind me is a cross trainer machine that I don't use enough, and behind that another bookcase, and above that bookcase I have a poster from World War II, which has a beautiful blonde woman surrounded by an officer from the respective services, and she's looking very, very self-satisfied, and they are looking like they're trying to impress her, and it says, "Keep mum, she's not so dumb. Careless talk saves lives." And considering that I write World War II espionage, my characters are strong female characters who often overhear things that they probably shouldn't have. It seems incredibly relevant.
It's quite a busy place then, where you are. Is that busyness, I don't know if I'm reading too much into these things, but is that busyness kind of mirrored in the way that you write, how ideas come to you?
Well, it's busyness because I have a lot of books, really, and one machine that I don't really use that often. For me, the way I write, I kind of get out of my own head when I write. And when I sit down, it's not planned. I'm not one of those people who can create the start to end with, there's going to be this happening on page 37 and that happening on page 126. I couldn't do that in school. I can't do that now. I sit down and I have an idea for a book. Pretty good idea where it starts, vague idea where it ends. And then I create the characters. And the characters then hold my hand and they take me with them on the journey. So while I write in my writing room because it's convenient, because I've got reference books if I want to look anything up, I probably could be doing the same anywhere else. And I have done it anywhere else as well. I've written on tubes. I've written in coffee shops and restaurants. But my writing room does seem to be the best.
Let me just bring you back to the room where you are. I know you've said that you don't really plan too much. Is there anything around you, though, which would give away some of the story? If I were to walk in, would I see post-it notes? Would I see a few plot points and ideas that you've jotted around and stuck to walls or a whiteboard?
Yes. So the poster behind me is always a good reminder, because I am one of those people, I will swivel around and sometimes stare at it. I have post-it notes all around my computer. I have a whiteboard off to the side. It doesn't really have plot details, but it does have kind of the overarching, what am I trying to do? And right now it also does have a printout from my book cover, because I get all excited with that.
And you said that you can write on tubes and you can write on trains and planes. Is there anything that you need to have with you, aside from a laptop or a tablet or whatever it is? Is there anything that you need when you write that just helps you tap into that headspace?
Not really. But I do use different things when my characters aren't talking to me. So,
okay, tell me more.
It's not so much the physical, but it's more the smell of things. So it's almost like if I need to call up the ghost of one of my characters, for example, my main character in City of Spies, I will wear the perfume that she's noted to wear.
When did you start doing that? What was the moment where you were probably having trouble getting into someone's mind when you thought, well, hang about, if I wear their perfume, it might help me get there.
It is a bit weird. I had also tried a couple of other things. I have a 1940s hat that I found at a charity shop. I've tried a couple of different things, but I do find that the scent somehow kind of connects me a little bit better. And it just kind of works. So I have a full-time job. So I try to take advantage of the time I have before kind of midday and after as much as I can. So I get up, I brew a pot of coffee, and I go into my writing room and turn on the laptop. I'll read through what I wrote the day before just to try to get the continuity going again. And then I'll sit down and I'll write from, say, about 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning until about 8:30 when I start my day job. In the days when I was still commuting, I would also print out what I had written the day before and take that with me to edit and use my tube journey to edit the work. During lunch, if I can get lunch, because my day is a little bit unpredictable, I will sometimes hide off again with the manuscript and come up with different ideas or go back and say, okay, if I put this in, that's going to change something back, and just try to make sure that it's consistent going forward. End of the day, go back, read through what I have, do a little bit of light editing. By about 8 o'clock at night, though, I'm done. My brain has turned off and it just does not want to come out anymore, with the exception of when I'm working against a crazy deadline, at which point I go back into university mode and I will burn the midnight candle as long as I have to until I get done what I need to get done.
Are you writing every day of the week?
I would like to say yes, but the answer is probably not. I have been for the last couple of months. Because I am trying to work to a deadline and I'm editing my second book, working on and editing my second book. But I would say during the weekday, yes. On the weekends, I probably do one day a week. And the other day I tried to, claw back some sort of social life.
Now that's quite a tight writing day. You've got time in the morning. You're using every minute that's available to you on the tube during lunch when you're back, constantly working on this manuscript. How much do you ideally like to get done in a day? Or is it just a case of, as I've said, using all the time to get everything out there?
Ideally, if I can get a chapter done, I'm happy. Sometimes I'll go back and bin a chapter and rewrite it and bin it and rewrite it. But what I have been doing, and I've been doing this for a couple of years now, is I lead, or not really lead, I leverage my day job into my writing job. So my day job, I'm a project and program manager. So very organized, you would think. So I should plan my books a little bit better than I do, but we're not going to go there. But I have had word count spreadsheets. So I started doing it just to track what I was doing. And then I thought, okay, well, let me turn this around. If the target is 100,000 words-ish, how long is it going to take me to find out how the book ends if I write 2,000 words a week, if I write 5,000 words a week, if I, you know, do 6,000 words a week, and I rarely do more than 6,000 words a week. So I kind of use that to spur myself on. And then I got myself really geeky at one point, and I did NaNoWriMo, and I started graphing everything so I could really see how I was doing with the word count. Not particularly great writing during NaNoWriMo, but anyway.
Did these things help you, or did they almost act as a almost a distraction? You graphing, you filling out word counts, spreadsheets. Sometimes things like that sound a little bit like, I want to kind of do the writing, but I don't actually want to write. This is still like I'm working, but I'm not actually having to do the arduous process of actually writing.
It's a little bit of light procrastination and the kick in the ass to get myself actually sitting down and writing. But it is a framework that does work for me, and I do get the writing done. And the thing is very often once I'm in the swing of a book, I don't really have a choice. The story is moving forward, and I write as fast as I can to keep up. The way I write is my first draft, I just want to get the story down because I don't know how it ends. I don't know what happens in the middle. So it is very bare of details. It is just this is what's happening. Second draft, I go back and add the color around it. I'm not one of those people as well who can do one draft and is perfect and it's done. I normally go through several drafts of a book before I show it to anybody.
It all sounds very methodical, Mara. It seems so well planned and structured. As I said, yeah, I'm gonna print out my manuscript so I can read it on the train. You're using every single slice of free time that you have to tell your story. Where does this come from? Is it mirrored in the line of work that you do? Have you always been like this?
I'm still reeling that you call my writing methodical because it doesn't feel like it when I'm in the middle of it at all. Yeah, it kind of has. My day job, as I said, I'm a program project business change manager. So for me to have a plan is just kind of natural. And when I'm actually writing the story out as well, sometimes I'll keep a timeline as to what's happening when. So I can kind of make sure I haven't gotten any time issues on something where 2 days have passed, but I've said 5 days have passed. So yeah, I guess it is a lot of my day job that's reflected in my writing. But I think it also is, if in the days where I was single, I had a lot more time on my own. Now it's trying to balance my relationship with my day job, with my writing. So I kind of have to find whatever tools I can to be able to do that.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
More with Mara in just a sec on Writer's Routine. This week's episode is sponsored by Nicholas Robinson and his brand new book, The House of Paris Le Grand. You can find out more about it. Grab your copy using the link in the episode notes below. And it's over at writersroutine.com as well. Now, if you want your book to sponsor a future show just like that, it's very easy to make it happen. You need to support us over on our Patreon page. If you're enjoying the tips that we're getting, if any of them have helped the way that you tell your stories, please say thank you to us with just a dollar or so a month on there. You can get your book to sponsor an episode if lockdown, well, and 2020 generally really has slightly hampered the dream publishing of your book that you had always envisioned. If it's kind of turned it into a bit of a damp squib, let me do the talking for you. I will plug it very heavily on the show. You can do that. You can sponsor us. You can also get bits of merch too. Just a little bit a month really helps us out. It helps us carry on bringing you chats with the most famous authors around as often as possible, so you can hear how they get stuff done. Maybe steal a few of their tricks as well. Do that. Head to patreon.com/writersroutine. Right, let's get back to it then with Mara Timone, talking about her brand new book, City of Spies. It's an espionage thriller in Lisbon during World War II. Now, in this half, we talk about how Mara gets into the head of her characters and finds that the tone and the voice that's right for them. We also talk about how you write thrillers when there's a lot going on elsewhere. So if you're focusing on one character and you know what the rest of what's happening in the story, how do they know the rest of what's happening in the story, if you kind of get it? How do you make your character aware of that? We'll get to that in a bit. And we pick things up talking about where she got that very first idea for City of Spies and how it all came from a suggestion on a train.
I'd written a book before, which is pretty much half-baked. And I was on a train going down for a business meeting with a couple of colleagues. And one of them knew I was writing, the other didn't. And she was asking me if I was going to be staying longer after our meeting in Paris, so I could do research. I said, well, yes, blah, blah, blah. And the other one is like, oh, well, when you're done with your book about France, you might want to consider doing something about Portugal. And this colleague of mine was Portuguese. And I thought, oh, well, you know, why do you say that? Because as far as I know, Portugal was neutral during the war. And that was such an incredibly naive thing for me to say, because so much was happening in Portugal during the war. And the more I started researching just the period, the more I was like, this is such an amazing time. How come more authors aren't writing about it? And I thought, okay, well, I have this character I created for the first book. What if I have her having problems in Paris, she has to leave, and I will get her to Lisbon, and let's see what happens in Lisbon in the City of Spies. And it just came from there. I had no idea how I was going to get her out of Paris. I had no idea what she was going to be doing in Lisbon. None of it. But I thought, let's see what happens, and let's follow the what ifs, and hopefully a good story will come out of it.
So it was taken from the character. What was it about Elizabeth that you wrote in the first book, which hasn't been published, I don't think, that, as you say, is half-baked? What was it about Elizabeth that really made you need to tell more of her tale?
She wouldn't go away. She was an ancillary character that I had in the first couple of chapters, and I thought, she's a filler. She's totally a filler. And as I started writing that book, I could almost feel her over my shoulders prodding me, saying, hurry up, because you're going to be telling my story next. And I thought, she's going to be fun. She's going to be so much fun. And she kept cropping up in the other storyline. And I'm like, I have to just put that down and deal with her, because otherwise I will never finish this other story. Because her voice was just so loud in my brain. But I think she's also one of those people that she's larger than life. She's a lot of fun, but she's so very accident prone. And the things that happened to her, you know, I got to the end of the book and I'm like, I feel like I've been on a roller coaster with her.
So what did you know about the story? I know you said you didn't know a lot. You didn't know how she was going to get out of Paris. You didn't know really anything else. What did you know about this story before you started writing that very first sentence?
I knew I wanted it to end up in Lisbon. I had done some research about Lisbon at the time. I wanted her to be involved with that. I had read about you had in Lisbon, it was kind of everybody was there. You had exiled aristocrats. You had smugglers. You had the German embassy was almost directly opposite the British embassy. So you can imagine them sitting on the roofs with binoculars, checking out what's happening on the other side. Nobody was who they said they were going to be. And I thought, what better place for her to operate? What if I have her there doing some espionage or counter espionage against this German ring that's operating out of the port? What if I get her involved possibly with some of the wolfram smuggling that was happening over there? What if? So I had a lot of what ifs, but I didn't have the storyline when I started at all.
If you're there with your character, almost stumbling around Lisbon in the dark, trying to figure out what the plot is, describe to me, when do you first start to know what shape this story is taking? When are you realizing actually what the plot is, where the thread is leading you?
Well, the interesting thing is it didn't feel like either Elizabeth or I was stumbling around in the dark, because she knew what was happening. I just had to figure it out. And one thing always ended up leading to another. And I got her out of France, got her into Lisbon. What happened? Somebody has asked her to do something. While she's trying to do that, she stumbles onto something else. I thought, okay, this is going to start to gain momentum. And it, one thing always led to another, and it just started to appear, and I kept following the what ifs.
And at what point?
So when you say I'm methodical, I really am not.
it's just the day is so methodical. It's fine. At what point are you starting to get a sense of how this is going to end, how it's all tying together?
That probably, I started getting an inkling about halfway through the book. And I was kind of at that point aiming for a particular ending. I didn't quite get the ending I thought I was going to get. And the reason for that is another one of those bizarre moments. Because when I write, there's, for me, I need to have the sense of place where I'm writing about. So I had gone to Lisbon and I pretty much cast about and said, let me see what I could find, what's going to happen where. I'd already been a couple of times before, but I knew something was going to happen in one particular town. I just didn't know what. And I went to that town and I wandered around, and it was the place itself gave me a hint as to what was going to happen there. And I don't want to say what it is because it's going to ruin the end of the book for you.
when you are in Lisbon, I mean, when you're writing about being in Lisbon and you're not too sure about what the plot actually is at this point, what you do know is the setting, the location. How are you bringing that to life with the words on a page? I know that sounds so simple and rudimentary for me to ask a writer, how are you writing, you know, how are you describing the buildings around you? But just give us a flavor of what that's like, especially writing a spy story set in the world, in the Second World War. You need to evoke a feeling in readers. How are you doing that?
First, I needed to get a little bit more familiar with the city myself. And I start peppering in bits of the city. What sort of food do they normally eat? What sort of places do they normally go? What's the music like? My character has quite a few mishaps or adventures going around some of the historic places, the relics, the remains of the castle. So I start adding things in there based on what I feel when I'm there. I kind of try to imagine how she would speak. She does not really speak like me, which is a little bit challenging. So I'm sure my copy editor, I probably owe quite a lot of beer to make sure that he fixed any Americanisms that I had peppered in there. But I kind of imagine her sitting beside me and talking and imagining the way she would talk and trying to capture that. Basically, I've created a fully formed ghost, and it's really just trying to get her onto the paper. So I am up close and personal. She's in my head, so I figure she might as well be in everybody else's head.
Sorry, I've always wanted to know, when writing first person, Mara, how do you deal with the stuff that your character doesn't know, but maybe we as readers do need to know?
That is a really good question. Some of it she gets from conversations with other people. Some of it she finds out the hard way. But if there's no way for her to have known about it, and there's no way one of the other characters could have given her that hint, she'll be stumbling into a problem, which might happen occasionally.
Let's talk about the edit then. You said kind of your first draft is just getting stuff out there. How do you possibly know where to begin in molding that draft into something that could be publishable one day?
I started off doing it for me. So it was more a case of, how can I tighten it up so that way it's something I would want to read? And once I get it as good as I can get it, and I will go through and try to make sure, you know, is this exciting? Does this happen? Does that happen? And once I go through the first draft, I might have a couple of notes saying, you know, you might want to include this in there, or you might want to include that in there, and I'll go back and pepper that in. Once I get it as good as I can do it, I'll bounce it off my agent. And my agent is an absolute star, and he'll give me a few suggestions that will definitely bring it to the next level. And the magic totally happens when my editor gets her hands on it. And I basically, any suggestion they make makes it a better book. So I'm not going to argue the point with them. I think I've debated it a couple of times, but they've really helped with that.
Why do you think sometimes you can't see the suggestions that they're making before they make them, if that makes sense? I've always wondered what's going on. When sometimes your editor will say something and you think, oh, it just seems so obvious. Why didn't I think of that? What is it that you think is getting in the way?
I think sometimes, especially if it's something I've just finished, I'm so close to it. And I think because I'm that close to it, I can't necessarily have that wider vantage point of, maybe you should have this happen over here. Maybe you should have that happen over there. And sometimes having that extra perspective just really, really helps. It might also be something like, hey, listen, you know, I read about this and that also was happening at the time. Did you want to include that or not? And I might then go away and have a think and think, okay, yes, that makes sense. Let's include it. Or I'm not quite sure if that will make it too busy because of this. So they'll make a suggestion, but we'll talk about it. So it's not a case of them saying, you must make this change, and me saying, you know, over my dead body. It's very much a case of, I have this suggestion, and I think it can work, but let's talk. Most of the suggestions that they made have been fantastic, so I'm by no means complaining.
And you're writing in, this is espionage fiction. When you're writing in genre, how closely are you paying attention to the tricks and the tropes and the standards of the genre, especially with something like espionage fiction, when there are so many spy stories out there that maybe you must worry that everything's been done before?
I didn't really have that worry for City of Spies, simply because Lisbon felt like fresh ground. Most of the spy books, female spy agent books, World War II based, are based in France or Germany, maybe one or two, a couple of them in England, not so many in Portugal. So that felt a little bit different. I wasn't really worried about something being done before. Why? I think because I was trying to stay as true to the character and see what was happening with her. And I figured that if there was something that did feel repetitive, I can change it on the edit. But it was something that, just to get the storyline down, I would probably have just pushed through.
And lastly, this is that you've just finished writing your second novel that will hopefully be published. What did you kind of learn from the first that you put into action when you started writing the second, about the way that you write, about actually what gets books published?
Oh, I think it's listen to my characters even more than I had been. In the second book, it's written in the first person again, but it's got two other main characters that have very loud voices as well. And I think it's not trying to shoehorn everybody into Elizabeth. And I think the other things that I was learning was, I think it's maintaining the links, making sure that what I was doing is A, true to the time, which I've always tried to do, but maintaining the pace, maintaining, you know, how can I tie it back into history? Because for me, that's the fun bit.
And that is it for this week's Writer's Routine. Thank you so much to Mara Timone. You can find out more about her brand new book, City of Spies, and get yourself a copy using the link in the episode notes below. And we've also got it over at writersroutine.com. You can find out more about the book that has sponsored this show too, The House of Paris Le Grand by Nicholas Robinson, in the episode notes and at writersroutine.com. Now, next week, we're chatting to Jane Fallon, all about her 10th novel, Queen Bee. It's out right now. We talk about working in lockdown, about overwriting, and about how she gets inspiration for her stories from where she lives and the type of strange characters who kind of surround her. So that's next week on Writer's Routine. I'm very excited for you to hear that. Now, in the meantime, if you'd like to support the show, you can do it in a few ways. First, very simply, with cash. Do that over at patreon.com. I thought I'd be honest. patreon.com/writersroutine. Also, we'd love you to do it by leaving a review for the show on Apple Podcasts, if that's how you are listening, and for tweeting about us whenever you can. Sending a retweet, that's always helpful. To do that, follow us on Twitter at writerspod, and you can get in touch with the show. Let me know what you think over at writersroutine.com, and I will see you next week with Jane Fallon. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.